A lot happens between last week's story of manna and this week's story of calling. So here's a one-minute summary. God had made that threefold promise to Abraham, that he would have descendants like the stars of the sky, that he would have land, and that he would be a blessing to the world. A few centuries later, the descendants part was definitely true, but the people weren't in their own land. They were enslaved in Egypt. So God frees the people, who make their way through the wilderness to Sinai. Along the route, they receive the manna, and eventually into their own land. Finally, they have everything they were promised. Almost. They weren't yet a blessing to the world. And maybe it's for that reason that things just don't feel right. God's people are not content. Actually, they're barely a people. More like a hodgepodge collection of families. Pseudo-governors called judges rule for a while, but mostly it's a period of lawlessness and chaos. Now, during this time, there were priests in the land. They didn't write sermons or play dodgeball with confirmation youth in the basement, at least as far as we know. Instead, their job was to oversee the people's offerings to God. This sounds minuscule, but really, it was key. Offerings and the worship attached were the main way people maintained their relationship with God. Priests managed this sort of bridge between heaven and earth, set up this way so that people could remember that God led them there and that God was still among them. This is when we get to today's story. This guy, Eli, and his sons were priests. But Eli's sons weren't the sort of priests you looked up to, like Dan. No, not like that. Instead, as the Bible says, they were scoundrels. And their chief sin was stealing from the offering. And they didn't even hide it. It was flagrant corruption. Needless to say, God wasn't happy about this. These guys were not only stealing, they were interfering in the relationship between God and the people. So God decides to do something about it. God calls Samuel. Samuel, who was just a boy. A boy who lived with Eli in a sort of apprentice, foster child, boarding school sort of way. He was so young and so inexperienced. He had no clue what God was about to have him do. No clue God was really going to do anything through him at all. So in our story, each time God calls Samuel, he runs to Eli and says, "Here I am," until finally they both realize that it's actually God calling. So then God calls again, and Samuel responds, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." I think Samuel was the eager sort of kid you'd want as a student if you're a teacher, the eager sort of kid you got driven nuts by if he was a classmate. Anyway, God speaks to him. God talks about the corruption in Eli's house. God talks about how Eli and his sons will be struck down. God talks about judgment and doom. And then God just leaves. He leaves this judgment with Samuel. Samuel is to be the bearer of news, the teller of truth, the prophet of God, and then God just leaves them there. And it's still the middle of the night, and the boy Samuel lies awake through the rest of the night until the sky slowly lightens and dawn comes. Ever lie awake in the middle of the night like that? You lie there for a few minutes, and you roll over and see the clock, 3:43 a.m. Ugh. You want to fall asleep, but your mind has other ideas. I'm not talking about when you lie awake thinking about menial tasks or being excited for the first day of a new job or at a new school or worried you had too much green chili. Those are annoying thoughts, but that's not what I'm thinking of. That's not what was happening to Samuel. I'm thinking about those times you lie awake with anxiety, almost with dread, knowing that there is a task ahead of you, something that you should do, but that you don't want to do, that you're afraid of, that you don't think you're quite up for. 5.5 years ago, I had a few nights like that. I'd just flown back from Minnesota after a good interview at Ascension. It was clear that there was a real opportunity here, a chance to move back to Colorado, as we'd always hoped, and to this great congregation. But that meant I was going to have to leave my former congregation. I lie there at night knowing I was going to walk into work the next day, and the senior pastor, a friend, was going to come into my office and close the door behind him and ask me how it went. I was going to have to tell him the truth, that it went great, and he was going to ask me what I thought, and I was going to have to tell him the truth again, that I thought this was a good opportunity. And he was going to say that he was happy for me because, you know, he was that kind of guy. 4:43 a.m. And then I was going to have to tell the congregation, and it was going to be lots of hard conversations. How on earth was I going to do that? Do I have to? Can't I just move in the middle of the night and leave a note? And what if I'm no good in this new place? What if this isn't really something I should do? Maybe I should just cancel it all. Maybe I should just call up Rich Johnson from the call committee and say, sorry, I'm too what? Anxious? Unsure? Chicken? Ugh, 5:43 a.m. A little light peeks through the windows. Eventually, you get to a point where you know you aren't falling back asleep, but you can't decide if you want morning to come. On the one hand, you'd love to be done with this self-inflicted torment, but on the other hand, with dawn comes the day, and with the day comes the thing you were dreading all along. With the day comes that frank conversation with your spouse you've been avoiding. With the day comes that job interview to attend or that layoff to announce. With the day comes that confrontational phone call or that apologetic email you know you should send. With the day comes papers to sign. With the day comes the final decision on college. With the day comes moving your parents out of their house and into a home which you know is anything but. With the day comes the should do, but also the really hard thing to do. Samuel lays there until morning, wide awake, not just because he heard God speak, which I'm told makes it hard to sleep, but also because of what God said, because of what Samuel now has to say. Ugh. So then he opens the door, and boom, there's Eli, the last person Samuel wants to see. So Eli asks, what happened? How'd it go? What did God say? Can I get a cup of coffee first? Let's talk about this after breakfast. No dice. Tell me, Eli says. So Samuel tells him. Tells him about the judgment on Eli and his sons and about how God's going to put an end to it and put an end to them. And that's when Eli gives a response that takes more courage and faith than you'll find pretty much anywhere. Seeing the anxiety in Samuel, seeing how this boy has not slept a wink and is probably on the verge of collapsing with fatigue and fear about what will happen to Eli, his sort of father/mentor, and fear about what he is now called to be and do. Seeing all of this, Eli doesn't debate Samuel. He doesn't disagree with the judgment or try to appeal to God through this boy. He doesn't even offer a pep talk. No, hang in there, little buddy, you got this. Instead, he tells him, it is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. Here's a little trick you should know when reading the Bible. In the Old Testament, when the word Lord is written in all caps, it is a translation of the Hebrew name for God. It isn't God in general, not the same word used for the gods of Egypt or of Canaan. No, Lord in all caps is the God who created the world and made promises to Abraham and brought the people out of slavery. That's who spoke to Samuel. It's the God we know in Jesus, the one who healed the sick and turned water into wine and brought the powerful to their knees and the lowly to their feet and died at our hands and rose for our life and who invites us to this table. That's who's calling Samuel. That's who's asking him to do this darn near impossible task, this stomach-churning task, this thing that just seems too hard for a boy to say, too hard for an old priest to hear. That's who's calling. And that's why Eli is willing to hear this tough word from this child truth-teller, because it is a word from the God who created light from darkness, the God who goes to the end of the earth and back again for us, the God who Eli trusts to do good. And so Eli urges Samuel to trust as well. It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. A survey was done a while back asking Christians if they felt called by God in their lives. Of course, most folks probably didn't have quite as vivid an experience as Samuel did, but maybe they still felt that God was calling them. The results of the survey were an emphatic no, which makes me sad. People didn't feel called by God. Maybe some folks don't feel called because their pastors haven't pointed it out to them, pointed out that that's how usually God works through people. If so, that's on us. But maybe other folks don't feel called because they feel their lives are too mundane, that God couldn't be behind our daily work in the office or changing diapers or doing homework or calling parents or children on a Sunday night. If that's the case, then our problem is our imagination. We struggle to imagine a God who would stoop so low, forgetting that stooping is the very way God prefers to love. But sometimes I think we assume that we aren't called, not because the calling is too mundane, but because it's too hard, too challenging, too scary. Stand up to a bully? Speak tough truths to the powerful? Forgive? Love the unlovable? Call out the sins of the unpopular, of the popular? Tell a group of Minnesota Lutherans you love that you think you're now being called somewhere else? We couldn't be called to do that, could we? That's too hard. Makes people too sad or mad or uncomfortable. We can't do that. God couldn't be calling us to that. I'm not going to give you a pep talk and tell you you're stronger than you think. Rather, taking a cue from Eli, when you feel compelled to do something hard, I urge you to consider if you're being called. Because if you are, then it is God who is calling you to the mundane or the darn near impossible task. It is God, the one who loves you beyond measure and will do, has done, anything for the sake of true life. It is God who calls, and God calls for the sake of goodness. So if you're lying awake at night, remember that. It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. Amen.